The liar contacts of Professor Hernandez in the 70s. She said she was from Andromeda. This is also from one of the important contact books of Wendell Stevens, from more than 20 years ago, minus 88, which he revised from the original, Spanish of Z. Rodriguez and R. N. Hernandez. When Professor R. N. Hernandez, a pseudonym, first met Liar, she told him her name was Alliance, and that she was not from this Earth, but came from a world in Andromeda, a planet which she called Inxtria. Hernandez jokingly said he would call her Liar for the Princess in Galaxy Wars, a science fiction feature in Mexico. And he used this name for her ever since. ETs are among U.S. scholarly historical UFO accounts suggest human-looking extraterrestrials living among us. A University of Mexico tenured medical professor who met with an extraterrestrial, posing as an ordinary civilian, helps corroborate claims of human extraterrestrials living among us. This professor was also a senior member of the Mexican Atomic Energy Commission. The professor used the pseudonym of Professor Hernandez and worked with a Mexican journalist, Z. Rodriguez, to release details of his contact in the early 1970s. It all began in 1972, with a voice in his head, leading him to scientific breakthroughs in his own medical research in immunology, which brought him special recognition by his peers. Professor Hernandez knew the ideas were not his own, because he had no background in developing them. They came to his mind full-blown, as though someone who knew perfectly well what he was talking about had explained them to him in detail. Later in that year, he was approached by the author of that voice in his head, and it turned out to be a beautiful extraterrestrial woman who said he could call her Alliance, which he changed to Liar for short. She met him several times on the university campus before she went any further. Liar wore a dark pantsuit of some very fine material that the professor could not quite identify. She had dark eyes and wore dark hair shoulder length. She walked our streets and breathed our ambient air with no difficulty. She even drank fruit juice with him at a sidewalk lunch table as they talked. She was obviously far better educated than Hernandez, and he was considered one of his country's foremost scientists. When the professor questioned Liar's extreme intelligence and the source of her superior knowledge, she took him into her confidence and told him that she was not from this planet, that she came from another world in a group of stars we called Andromeda. He thought she meant the Andromeda galaxy at first. On a subsequent meeting, she guided him to a secluded desert area outside of Mexico City and took him aboard her disc-shaped spacecraft. There, she showed him many scientific wonders, and at one point took him to a viewing screen where she worked some controls and brought up an image of a star field in the screen. She showed him some guide stars in Cassiopeia and in Andromeda constellation, and then showed him where her home sun was in relation to those other stars. Liar told Mr. Hernandez that there were many space races far more advanced than men of Earth who were also coming here for exploration, observation, and study of our humanity, about to enter a point where we would either join others in space travel and exploration, or we would eliminate ourselves in a suicidal employment of our primitive technology. We had become a society of some interest to many. Liar picked the professor up and took him on trips on her spacecraft on four occasions. One of them was a small 5-meter diameter explorer. Another was a 60-meter intermediate ship that carried a number of the smaller ones. And one time he was taken to a much larger mother ship that was a mobile support base for several of the intermediate class. She said that they had many teams working in our solar system and here, and they had many Earth contactees. She told the professor of another contactee being used by a different contact team from her society who lived in Chicago. His name was Thomas Haskins, and he was a black man who lived in the South Side. Professor Hernandez ultimately met Haskins and they compared notes. Liar also told the professor of other space-traveling races carrying out operations on this planet, including, remarkably, some contacts by pioneers with a one-armed man who lives in Switzerland. This was mentioned to the professor in 1976, before anything on the Pleiades contacts in Switzerland had been released outside of a very small local group of people around that man. Fernandez's story was investigated by Lieutenant Colonel Wendell Stevens, who corresponded with Zfa Rodriguez. Stevens found many similarities with other contactee cases, even though Hernandez could not have known of these. He decided to translate Rodriguez's book of Hernandez's experiences and eventually concluded that Hernandez was credible. As in the Adamski and Menga cases, Fernandez reveals that his extraterrestrial contact could easily blend into the Mexican population. In contrast to the Adamski and Menga cases, Lia was alone and did not appear to have a buddy. While she did not own a car, she knew how to navigate Mexico City's road system to ensure that Hernandez could reach the destination of her flying vehicle. Her ability to meet with Hernandez in city locations and knowledge of how to travel to rural areas, again suggests familiarity with the location and customs of the native population. It is not only contactees that have discussed extraterrestrials living among us, there are also the testimonies of highly credible whistleblowers who make similar claims. In 1984, with his contacts still going on, Professor Hernandez could no longer be reached by Zfa Rodriguez or other researchers who had made contact with him as a contactee, and nothing of him has been discovered of him since, though both private and police detectives have continually searched. A full 224-page report on these contacts has been published as UFO Contact from Andromeda, by Rodriguez Stevens. Some of it below further here. The beginning. Lia, a woman of extraterrestrial origin, beautiful, intelligent and noble, arrived at a most unexpected moment in my life. Nevertheless, this came to pass several years before I understood the magnitude of her presence on our planet Earth. I was able to count almost 50 years of age when I saw her for the first time. I was already at that time a confirmed skeptic of all that related to parapsychology, telekinesis, and incredible phenomena such as spontaneous combustion. But above all, I believed it a waste of time to believe in the existence of extraterrestrial beings. I shared the opinion of many scientists concerning evolution. Also, I had carried on long conversations with astronomer colleagues who had assured me of never having seen anything floating or flying in space that were not our satellites or spacecraft sent into space by man, of Earth. My mind was blank on this aspect. It began to fill as I matured, and I knew that as a university professor I could not give credit to that which lately they have called pseudoscience. I had not only commented on this with my students concerning themes of importance, but with my own colleagues as well. I felt completely accomplished, absolutely satisfied with life. However, I knew that I was beginning to reach maturity because my thoughts returned frequently to the past, but my present was really fulfilled. I had the privilege of being counselor to the majority of my students. Into this circumstantial arena she came. Lia appeared in my life so suddenly that I had to let several years elapse to begin to describe the presence and teachings of her. I felt at the time that the point of departure was not so far away and that the end of my existence approached irresistibly, like the goal of a runner or like the set of the sun in the west. I believe that my professional stage was finalizing without imagining in the least that Lia would bring to my existence something for which to fight. It came in the moment in which the love for things became indelible. It came at the time when circumstances move one emotionally, the age in which nothing is rejected, and on the other hand, yes, all is possible. At this time I feel thankful with the world, with God, for all that which has been granted me without my having merited it. My parents had wrapped me in diapers soft as silk at birth, and the first air that I breathed had a pleasing scent of roses from the enormous garden that surrounded the house. Now I have three beautiful children and wife. What could I possibly desire? Thinking on this, I waited, with resignation, the winter of my life. The fruit of my existence had filled my life of satisfactions. Each day that passed teaching classes at the university gave me the satisfaction of having sown the seeds of knowledge, and that precisely this had been my great opportunity. My walk through the wide roads of this world had not been sterile. As tenured professor of the university, and as investigator of nuclear mathematical physics, I knew that I had arrived at the limits of my professional life. I perceived the respect of my superiors. years before I had received a national prize in physics. Thus, in these circumstances was when Liar came to me, and I must admit, that since then never left my mind nor my heart. I was not a youth easily influenced. I was well rooted in my habits and likewise as well in my opinions. But, how did this all begin? Was there anything magic in the encounter? Was it accidental or intentional? I never knew. The 14th of November 1972. Today, Tuesday, while I was at the university attending a conference on odontopediatrics, I saw her for the first time. I was standing at the back of the room. There was a beautiful young woman of slightly oriental characteristics, white skin and slender body. Her hair was long and dark, and fell languidly over her shoulders. She was dressed entirely in black, wearing tailored slacks and blouse of the same material, which to me seemed like laminated plastic. She had persistent light green eyes. It seemed like her eyes were pointed directly at me and I could feel her gaze even in the obscurity of the room. There was an instant in which our looks coincided and I felt a strange chill run over my whole body. Despite my vain attempts to concentrate on the exposition of the class, I could not. In my mind the figure of that young woman, as enigmatic as fascinating, remained etched. But when I again looked towards the group I noticed that she was no longer there. I searched the room to see if I could find her seated in some other place, but no, she was not there. I looked toward the door and it occurred to me that this had been closed. At that time I did not deem it important. The first shadows of evening had already appeared when the exposition ended. I went to the parking lot and got into my car. I was experiencing a strange sensation of well-being and I unconsciously turned on the radio to listen for the news, but it did not work right. I could hear only heavy static. Perhaps the antenna, I thought. But, upon checking this I found it all right. I tried to synchronize the apparatus without success. I could do nothing in. I was about to turn the radio off when I heard a new noise. More new static and then silence. After that I began to clearly hear a hollow, metallic voice, that slowly began to articulate words in perfect Spanish. Finally the voice spoke without interference and said in perfect accent, "You are connected to our frequency, Earthman. You have entered the primary phase and it will be easy in what follows which I want to repeat. You are going to have news." I was disconcerted, but at that moment I did not relate the one thing with the other. Later, some time after the voice had disappeared I continued thinking and trying to discover the significance of this. The radio remained dead for a little more than a half hour. After the same manner that the frequency had gone, I heard a melody. The route to my house seemed long, but later I noticed with surprise that I had been making big circles, as if, subconsciously, I did not want to get to my destination. I shook my head which had begun to feel heavy, trying to dismiss these ideas. At that time I did not connect the voice of the message with the woman I had seen at the university. A little while later I was comfortably seated in my favorite chair with a refreshment at hand, reading, when I fell into a profound sleep. The 18th of December 1972, more than a month passed. I had almost forgotten the encounter with the woman, as attractive as mysterious. Today I got up without ever imagining that I would have another encounter with her. This time it was in a place completely different. It happened in an open-air restaurant. Along the Avenida Insurgents. While I was breakfasting with Carlos, a friend and colleague for years, I looked toward the entrance door and I saw her. Yes, I saw her. In the light of day her beauty stood out. In her were combined characteristics as exotic as natural, but her personality was such that she could project not only that sureness, which always characterized her, but upon seeing her I felt a mixture of tenderness, of knowledge, of peace and internal tranquility. She was accompanied by a man dressed in a uniform with an insignia on the left side of his breast. It was a gold triangle inside of which was a blue circle. The man was stylishly good-looking also and a little taller than her. Liar must measure more than 1.90 meters. He almost touched the top of the door with his head. Instinctively I got to my feet. The look of Carlos and the ridiculousness of my reaction made me remember that I should not be so impulsive. "What happened?" asked Carlos. "Pardon me, I thought it was another person whom I have not seen in some time," I said, leaning. At 5 PM I had to teach a class, and I looked at my watch. It was scarcely 10 AM. I needed to know who she was. But why such sudden interest renewed in a woman of much beauty but of whom I knew absolutely nothing? After we finished eating, Carlos and I left for the university. I decided along the way that I would begin to investigate that beautiful woman. I reviewed my listings of students, but there was no new student such as her, nor did I have knowledge of the presence of any person as an auditor in my class. For then I decided that here I would begin to take a certain care to only see her. Of one thing I was convinced. She was real, she was not a vision created by my mind. She really existed. It was not until the 12th of January when I had my third encounter. The classroom was darkened. This was because I was projecting slides to illustrate my lecture. While I was running the transparencies, she entered. At the moment I was stunned. Here again was the woman, always dressed in black. She had entered at the moment I was discussing the most important point. Perhaps my students had not observed my disturbance in the obscurity of the room, and also because the transparencies were occupying their attention. I felt her gaze, seeming that her eyes had their own light. She stared fixedly, without blinking. But far from feeling nervousness, her gaze infused an indescribable calm and inner peace. I was trying to calculate her age. I thought she might be 30 years old. That was a little old to be my student, but considering that there are people who study for 2 or more careers, this detail could pass unnoticed. When the class ended, I turned on the lights only to observe that she had disappeared in the shadow of the doorway. I opened a path through my students, but when I finally could get out, she was no longer there. I asked a youth who had been near the door if he had seen a woman of her characteristics. He looked at me like one would observe a bacterium under a microscope, and glancing with sneer answered negatively. "During my 25 years as a professor, never has anything like this happened to me before." I felt grieved. I blamed myself. I am 50 years old and I am acting like an adolescent in his first passes as a conquistador. I went back into the room, picked up my books and secured the projector and transparencies and left. I still had to walk a good distance before getting to my automobile. Meanwhile, I walked reflectively. I got in my car and headed for my house. Ever since then, and without my suspecting it, someone in some part of the universe has been making plans to establish some kind of friendship with me. But was my imagination more fantastic than I could have dreamed? And why a septic? Why me? Thus began to knit in turn for me the maze of knowledge that filled my consciousness, of doubts, of illusion. But still it lacked the most important part. From Chapter 2, Our First Discussion, the 22nd of December 1974, due to the intense work that we were engaged in at the laboratory of the university, some colleagues and I had agreed to finalize all the tests which would take us to the end still in time for vacation. This was very important as we were working on a new vaccine. The empty classrooms were cold and full of silence. The air felt lighter and the gardens lay resting from their normal activity. While analyzing a cell under the microscope, I imagined that the solitude might inspire us to carry on our labor. While awaiting the cellular reaction, I leaned my head against the window to feel the weak rays of the sun that came through the glass. It was a cold day, but absolutely clear. Beautiful. While looking toward the hallway, I saw her. Standing out beside a door, she looked directly toward where I was. She gave me the impression that I had known her all my life. As I looked at her, I felt a relaxation such that it produced in me an incredible happiness. Emotionally reinvigorated should be the word. And if I had sang and danced, it would not have seemed strange to me. I experienced also an undefinable association between her and I, still at a distance. Her presence seemed completely familiar to me. It was as if something in my interior awaited her without having advised me. I turned my work over to a colleague and went down, a little to be sure she was still there, and another such impulse that I didn't know what, which attracted me irresistibly toward that place. At 2 or 3 meters I stopped. She smiled, but in her smile there was no evil, nor any coquettishness. It was a sweet look and therefore a candid smile, like one who greets with pleasure the return of a friend. "Good day, Professor," she greeted me. "Good day, Senorita," was my response. I looked at her profoundly while she extended her hand. It may seem strange, but to me you seem so familiar, so well known, that I would judge that you and I have already had a pact at a level of friendship. I told her, "Professor, I have come to look for you. I have tried to make these encounters, having come precisely to see you. The strangeness is not that you have expected to see me, but that you would have the occasion to see and hear afterward." "You have come to find me?" I asked, full of surprise. "Thus it is. My name is Lya, and on the Earth, as well as in other parts of the universe, my mission is to investigate all types of intelligent life, its association with the planet, its adaptability, and the biological social prolongation in its development." "What are you trying to say? What other parts of the universe?" "I shall explain, Professor. I am not of this planet. I come from one that is thousands of light years from Earth. I am part of an investigative group." "How?" I asked, still without believing what I was hearing. "Yes, I know that you do not believe now this that I tell you. Members of the group to which I belong and I have tried to open telepathic communication, but we felt that this could have disturbed you a little emotionally, for which we decided on direct communication. You are an objective and analytical man. It will be very difficult for us to overcome your skepticism. You yourself at the end of all this will be able to analyze with empathy all that I have said to you. We know that you do not believe all that you receive through the bioelectric telepathic stimulus. You are an honest receiver, but our intentions would not change the results if we did not speak to you directly. What is it that you are intending? To make me leave my way of life? I have heard of persons who spend their life jumping from one fantasy to another. But what you say surpasses the limits of imagination," I said, getting angry. "No, Professor, I know that for you it is difficult to believe, but finally you will accept our existence, which is not as brain-busting as the existence of the human being on the Earth. Or, do you believe perhaps that a being of this planet would be able to doubt your existence still while I am looking at you?" Momentarily I felt confused. "Pardon. Point one must go to my work," I said in a manner of excuse. "Look, Professor. Peer directly into my eyes and think of something that interests you, or something that is not fixed in your cerebral neurons, though being imaginative. To yourself. And that, why? I can know what you think," she added. I laughed incredulously. "Try it," she insisted. I could not lose anything. I closed my eyes and in my mind I began to pronounce the Greek alphabet. "Oh, no, Professor," she said, "the Greek alphabet is too simple. Think of something else. Ask me a question in your mind." I mentally asked, "Is it true that you come from another planet?" She answered me, "Yes." I could have been surprised, or perhaps she could have made me nervous. Nevertheless, I felt profoundly relaxed and also experimented with unusual mental concentration. "If in truth you come from another planet, how is it that you speak perfectly in Spanish?" I asked. "On my world they take very little time to learn a language. We dedicate ourselves to knowledge. It takes us very little time to know a planet in all its totality." "What do you want, or what do they want of me?" I asked. "Not only of you," she responded, "we hope that we will be given the opportunity to explain all that has been discussed with us. Because of our presence here on Earth, many are afraid, terrified. They look on us as divine beings, celestials, but we nevertheless are like you, with some variations. We love life. It seems to us an affront to this live opting for the mistaken line. They express themselves with violence and live in ignorance. But the rescue of worlds such as yours is not permitted, at least to us. nor are we permitted to defend other people who live in constant bellicosity and live in constant fear of other people through extended frontier lines. Your planet has no overseer. No part of the Earth carries this distinction. That is what we study. We analyze the life, also of planets like yours. We study the beings who possess a short life, like you for example, and also we study the human reaction faced with death. Why do you say planets like ours? I inquired. Because on planets like ours death does not exist, or there are almost no deaths to speak of. And for this you have come? Perhaps you are representatives of a new religion for which you are proselyting? I must say I am feeling little thanks thinking that I am the victim of some scheme. No, Professor. Don't think that. In the same manner that you are carrying out an investigation of cellular reaction to obtain, or to try to obtain, a vaccine, in the same way we work to eradicate many stimulus factors that could prejudice a great number of races which, distributed throughout the universe, do not know or have lost the capacity of knowledge concerning the eradication of antigens. How do you know what I am working on? I asked in surprise. I know much about you. Ask and I will respond. How is it that there are races that do not die? How old are you? The cellular degeneration brought as a consequence of decrepitude or old age produces a constant anxiety in the human being. The fear of dying or to cease being is reflected in the fear that man has of death. Many races have found the way to prolong life. This for you would be a secret that has ceased being such in my world, in which biological prolongation is no secret, but now universal knowledge. About my age, I am young in relation to many of my race type. I am almost 900 years old. Or 9 centuries if you prefer it that way. I will respond to many of your questions, but for now I desire that you meditate on our discussion, that you not comment on, not for now. I may surprise you that at times I am near to you, very near. For now I want you to know that, when our conversation is still telepathic you can sometimes produce it yourself. Our combination will be as direct as you permit. And if I deny it? I asked, still incredulous, though no less flattered to be conversing with such a beautiful woman. She looked at me a long time, reading perhaps each of my thoughts. Then she said, "We not deny it, Professor, you are educated. The same as I, you try to apply all the physiological knowledge that is at hand to know me still more. You fear that I am playing a prank on you, and desire to submit me to some study to understand my mind. I, Professor, could refuse to respond and nevertheless I have come to this, to converse with you about your world, about the future of this fabulous planet called Earth. I can tell you that not only we have been visiting your Earth. There are many civilizations which have done this, and almost all are in agreement that your world is a privileged place. For now, Professor, be a little calm, relax. And above all guard our secret. In due time we can talk." She extended her hand in goodbye. I wanted to take myself out of all this. I felt fear. It seemed to me that I could be stopped at a point from which I might be easily pushed. Was I the victim of a joke? Who would be interested in playing such on me? Perhaps someone who well knew my points of view concerning beings of other worlds. But, are they reading my mind this way? Speaking Greek also? This was still at the point of begin. The rest, the unknown, the surprising, the incredible would come with the passage of the months, with the transpiring of years. And nobody would leave off questioning me. Why me? From Chapter 3, Lethal Belt Around the Planet, the 22nd of April 1975, I did not ask for it. Nor did I even think about it, but nevertheless I am traveling in the spaceship with Lyar. I had gone to participate in a conference on the theme of effective neutralizers for anesthesia. That afternoon I felt particularly exhausted. I had been speaking for almost 2 hours without interruption. At the end of the lecture I still had, among my notes, several unanswered questions. Some students and I went out into the corridor, still talking a little as we parted and went our separate ways. As I headed for the parking lot I scarcely imagined that Lyar was waiting for me in the car. She smiled candidly. My expression of surprise must have seemed amusing. "Hello," she said in greeting. "Hello," I responded. "Are you in much of a hurry?" "No, it is only that I want to rest," I said. "Would you like to go on a mission as co-pilot?" I introduced the key into the door lock, still without answering. I placed my papers and my portfolios in the rear seat and sat down, started the motor and turned to look at her. "Today has been an especially tiring day. All morning at the university, lunch at midday, and all afternoon in conference. Couldn't this be another day?" I asked, almost pleading. It was quiet for a moment and I turned to look toward the exit. In a low voice she said, "It is important. I cannot assure you that you will have another opportunity like this." "And this mission, is it very far?" I asked. "That depends very much on how your concepts of time and space are developed." "Very well," I said as I locked the door, "if it is not too far, I accept." How far it was I could not imagine, since for her, time and distance do not exist, nor had she considered whether it was too late or too early to undertake some action. I never saw her look at a watch. Nor did I know that neither space nor distance needed any hurry. Her people, her folk and perhaps beings of other worlds with the same characteristics as her, do not know the limitations of this so-called time, distance or space. For her, to exist is it, simply, without the limits of timetable or distance. Lia lived at entire liberty. En route, while I was stopped for a red light semaphore, she said to me, "Close your eyes." I obeyed. I felt her hand touch my forehead. At that instant the muscles of my face relaxed, my head cleared, my mind concentrated and my body little by little began to recover its vigor, all this at the contact of her hand. "There it is," she said, signaling the light turned green, "let us go." "Toward where?" I asked. "Go toward the north, I will guide you." After 2 hours and a half this way, we came to a trunk route between Hidalgo and Onaretaro. We stopped at a separated place where there was an abundance of cactus. It was quite late. I looked at my watch, 9:30 p.m. Now I began to feel anxiety about the prospect of a possible assault. Again I was tired, or could it be nervousness? Comment: it seems like the home civilization of Lia did not have the big overview on how, to the spiritual science, our Earth is now so far on its spiritual path, so it is protected against those negative civilizations that she warns against, and similar against any destruction of the planet itself by the way of nuclear destruction. And remark: it started a new wave of UFO contacts in those years, also to our own races that could easily mix and hide in earthly society.